Blog Talk Radio.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey. Radio PI, now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
We go. And welcome in to the post-game edition. Of Radio PI.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information.
All right, there we go. That's better. A little technical difficulty to start the show. Wonderful start, huh? Welcome into this playoff edition of Radio PI. I'm your host, Nick Case. Joined shortly by Brian Keenan and Paul Clemente. In fact, we have one of them on the line right now. You're on Radio PI, post-game with Nick. Hey, who's this?
Hey, Nick, this is Brian.
Hey, Brian. You know, I don't think we've actually ever talked before. I don't know that we've actually ever communicated via anything other than, like, tweets or text or direct messages. So it's nice to finally hear your voice.
Yeah, I was realizing that as well when I heard you talking.
Yeah. When I was stumbling and fumbling over the intro there, as I realized I didn't have my headphones in the right jack to hear anything.
Got on the call that early, so I'll give you a pass.
Yeah. Only the people tuning in to the show in the morning will hear that. Bless their hearts. But yeah, it's what I get for realizing, oh, the game is about to end. I should set up and not setting up until the game has ended and trying to rush to do it. But hey, you know what? It's kind of like the playoffs, man. You fly by the seat of your pants, and here we are. We flew by the seat of our pants in that game, and the Penguins definitely did. And not knowing who's going to lead them onto the ice until the timing was right. And look what happened. We got a win. Matt Murray stepping in at the last minute, leading the troops onto the ice on top of Jeff Zatkoff, who played well in two games. But really, Matt Murray, it was his game, and we are joined now by Paul Clemente, Evil Share himself. Paul, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, good, man. It's good coming out of that. That game made me pretty nervous. I'm glad coming out of it pretty happy.
Oh, absolutely. Especially towards the end there, the last 15 minutes, as soon as Matt Cullen scored that go-ahead goal, I started checking that clock like I hadn't checked it all game, and was really just waiting for the seconds to tick away.
Yeah, I felt a lot better, actually, after the Cullen goal. I think the Penguins played exactly how they wanted to play. Just an extraordinary effort by just a couple different players. And, you know, I'm sure we'll touch on this later, but if you ask me personally who I thought the better players were, it would not be, you know, Crosby, Malkin, Letang. It's all guys like, you know, Rust and Sheary and Cullen. Just an extraordinary effort by those guys. Just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was definitely their depth that kind of helped them just dominate the Rangers in gameplay. I don't know what you want to say. You know, as on edge of your seat as you were at the end of the game, I mean, I'll tell you what, I was certainly getting very nervous there into the second period as Lundqvist looked like he was just going to pitch a shutout no matter what Pittsburgh did. We let them get a game on Lundqvist's shoulders the last time, and we really couldn't afford to let it happen again. So good good to see him make a couple plays and get out of there with a W.
Yeah, and everybody, I mean, let's face it, as I said, Jeff Zatkoff, his first game, as Mike and I talked about in our first show of these postseason, his first game was phenomenal. You ride off into the sunset on that kind of thing. If situations are ideal and you never have to buy another drink in this town again if they win the cup. Second game, it wasn't so much his fault, but the shine came off a bit. Everybody kind of breathed a deep sigh of relief when they saw that it was Matt Murray leading everyone onto the ice.
What a sparkling performance he had, too.
Yeah, I mean, certainly doesn't hurt when you only face 17 shots. And I know I touched upon that the last call in after game two. It was troubling to see the way the Penguins were playing with their skaters five on five. And, they certainly laid to rest any notion that they're going to have trouble with New York in the possession game. I mean, they crushed them tonight.
And I saw somebody tweet this towards the end of the game, and it's absolutely true. New York played, after they got their one-goal lead, they played basically the rest of the game like they had a four-goal lead, just sitting back and letting it come to them. And against a team like the Penguins, that is the absolute worst thing you can do, because the Penguins will thrive into that. You want to let us have the puck and take possession and drive to the net and shoot? Okay, why not? That's the dumbest thing, if you're any team, that you can do with this Penguins team, one that, as you said, just drives possession on a day-to-day, game-to-game basis and has that as their bread and butter. Letting them take control, what a mistake.
I mean, in their defense, I'm not sure that was the wrong choice, though. I don't think they would have been able to really control Pittsburgh if they had tried to keep things going. So maybe trying to batten down the hatches and get out of there with Lundqvist saving the day wasn't the worst call in the world. I mean, if they're trying to open things up, chances are that Penguins are going to be opening up a couple of rushes on the back end and really putting Lundqvist in a tough position. So I don't know about that. I mean, I just think we're watching a Penguins team that is driving play better than any of those teams we've seen during the Crosby and Malkin era.
And I also saw a lot of times when, especially with Rust and Sheary on a couple of plays, as soon as they hit the zone and they had a little bit of room, they didn't go up against the half wall and sit and wait and wait and wait and then pass back to a D and hopefully go to the net. They drove to the net. They just hammered down. They worked hard. They pushed to the net. Russ had that power move in the third where he cut on the circle and went right into Lundqvist. It was just amazing. And it's not what we're used to seeing, but it's exactly what a team like that needs, and that's why they're incredibly successful right now.
It really is night and day from the past couple years under Shero, seeing what these young kids are doing and how they're stepping up and how they're playing. You know, in the past we had the Aaron Ashams and the Tanner Glasses of the world out there in the fourth line, and you were lucky if they even got a shot on net, let alone the play that Rust made in the third, as you mentioned there, Paul, cutting in to the front of the net on Henrik Lundqvist like that and even potentially getting a shot, knocking the stick out of Lundqvist's hands and making a more dangerous opportunity. We didn't see anything like that in the past couple years of the Shero era, and even last year as Rutherford kind of worked his way out of the cap hell that Shero had left behind. It's so refreshing to see. It's so refreshing to see.
We were definitely the team where, I remember in 2013, actually Nick and I did a lot of podcasts after the Islanders games for whatever reason. I just remember that vividly. And
yeah,
they, like, we couldn't play the fast teams, the old Penguins teams. We couldn't play well against the Islanders. We never played well against the Leafs because they had just all these young, speedy guys that caused us a lot of trouble, and now we're that team. And what makes us different than those teams that were, you know, a lot quicker than us and a lot more, you know, they're more focused on puck possession is that we have skill to back it up. At the time, the Islanders had a young Tavares. They had Okpozo, Kuhlman, and just a bunch of like weird mishmash guys, but they're fast and they drove to the net, and it took us this long to figure it out. Now we're that team that, you know, we play good against every team but Pittsburgh. We're that team now. We're that fast, speedy puck possession team. And I'll tell you what, I mentioned this on game two probably more times than I should have, but I just have a really good feeling about this team this year. I really do.
I mean, we saw it down the stretch, and when they can play at that level, and it wasn't a bunch of teams who had already packed it into the season. These were teams fighting for playoffs, fighting for positioning, and they just destroyed them. I mean, it wasn't anywhere close. They weren't competitive games. And seeing that, it's hard not to just see the Penguins as a team that can march their way to the finals and hopefully another cup. I mean, it's probably the most optimistic we've been able to be as fans of this team since the cup runs in 08 and 09.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think maybe 2013 was the last time you felt this good, and they were just absolutely stymied by the Bruins, and I just don't see that happening with this team.
Yeah.
I don't see them just getting running into a wall like that, and not so much because of the competition that they'll play against, but also because just of the fact that they're just such a deeper team. I mean, sure, that team had Jerome Iginla essentially on the third line, but they were slow. And once you got beyond that third line, what was there? There was hot garbage.
Yeah, who do we have on the third line now? I mean, it depends on what you want to label them as, but it's either Phil Kessel or Evgeny Malkin. So that's a little bit better than Iginla coming down off the front of his career.
I still love Iginla with all of my heart. I'll never take it back.
It's a shame that era lasted all of 2-3 months, because man, just to be able to say that he was a Penguin is just—it's still surreal. And I remember writing an article back at the time that just sit back and enjoy this, because you've got Jerome Iginla on a team with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang, and you're so spoiled right now. And it just Penguins fans over the past 30 years have just been so spoiled to see Lemieux and Yager and Francis and Robitaille and Iginla and Crosby and Malkin and Gonchar and all of these guys that I'm forgetting just pass through and play on this team and on this ice. It's surreal that in 30 years one team has had that much talent pass through its wings, and we're blessed. Hashtag blessed. We really are.
Blessed. B-L-E-S-T.
That's right. But more thoughts about the game. I was only able to catch about 2/3 of it. I was making dinner and watching. I was making dinner, then eating dinner, and then caught the final period. It seemed like the kind of usual acts, one, act two, act three for the Penguins, where the first they kind of play to their competition a bit and gain steam as the game wears on, and the second and third is where they've really turned it on. What was your guys' thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly looked to get stronger as the game went on. I thought they looked their strongest there, though, about halfway mark through the second period. It's just, they were running into a hot goaltender in Lundqvist, and, you know, they probably should have gotten a couple of goals in that stretch right there alone. But if they can keep doing that, this is going to be a short series from here on out. I mean, the Rangers just can't match what the Penguins are able to put on the ice. And, you know, if we have Murray back in net, or Fleury, if he gets back before the end of the series and they're able to play at the levels they did this year, I mean, it's tough for the Rangers to be able to match any of that.
It's so nice hearing that. You know, it's so nice hearing that and believing it. I think one thing that stuck out to me besides, you know, the incredible efforts of the young guys was just the mentality of it all. Is, you know, the first period didn't work out for them. You know, they give up a shorty in the second period to Fatty Nash, like, right off the bat, and they could have crumbled. And the Rangers were just pounding the ever-loving hell out of the Penguins. They were hitting them every opportunity they got. Legal hip checks, just every little shove, every little extra half stride, they're hitting the Penguins. And after every whistle, there's a scrum. And I feel that in past years, you know, they would have gotten drawn into those types of things with Gino or Letang or whatever kind of goon that they were employing, like a Glass or an Asham or a Craig Adams, you know, and it would have cost us anything. But everyone kept their cool. Everyone stood up for themselves, but they didn't get drawn into bad penalties. I mean, Trevor Daly got hit so hard his helmet popped off and Nash just wrecked him. Didn't come after him. The team didn't come after him. They just business as usual, and they didn't crumble. They played their game. You know, they scored that other one. Matt Cullen just beat Lundqvist on his own. Just unbelievable play by him. And they just kept at their game after the third. They tried to bring a little bit more, and they just kept at it. And Sullivan has such good control over the players on their bench. It's just outstanding to see.
Yeah, and it's go ahead, Brian. Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean,
go ahead, Brian.
You saw him. You saw him start trying to turn on the Jets, and you're just hoping he could kind of knock the puck deep. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm not entirely sure what happened. Still, it looked like the Rangers might have collided into each other a bit, and he was just able to skate around them and get in on Lundqvist. It was just out of nowhere.
Amazing.
Man, what a way to take the lead.
Yeah.
And Matt Cullen, what can you say about him? This guy, you know, the jokes, ageless wonder, blah, 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 but 39, 40 years old, and he's still got jets and wheels like that, and the forethought to just fire off a quick shot like that, it's beyond impressive what he has brought to the table this year. And somewhere out there, Grim Rutherford is patting himself on the back and having a nice warm cup of milk and congratulating himself for that signing, because what can you say that hasn't already been said other than wow, just wow.
What an effort. What a player. Just everything he's done off the ice too, you know, reading a lot of Yoey stuff, just how he's taking the young kids from Wilkes-Barre under his wing. He's out there coaching people. He's keeping the room light. They compare him to, you know, the Billy Guerin of the cup run, which it seems like he's just needing every cup run. You always have that veteran that's, all right, I've been here before. You know, he won the cup. Did he win the cup of the Hurricanes?
He did indeed, yes.
Yeah, he won the cup of the Hurricanes. So he's like, hey, guys, I've been here before. This is what to expect. He's just been an absolute leader on and off the ice, getting involved with all the scrums, pulling guys off. There's one scrum that happened right in Murray's face, and Matt Cullen actually grabbed Murray and shoved him over to the side, like, okay, you stay here, don't get hurt, you know. Just little stuff like that. And then backing it up with that absolutely gorgeous goal. I mean, what else can you ask for a guy that you can, you know, pay in under $1 million?
Brian, any thoughts?
gotta enjoy what he's bringing to the ice while we can, because looking ahead at the salary cap, it's going to be hard to fit him back in. And even then, I mean, he's due, even at his age, for a fairly sizable raise. I mean, he made, what, $700K? Got to imagine this guy's going to get about $2 million or so in free agency. So, you know, hopefully he has a decent number of games ahead of him as a Penguin. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be hard to kind of fit him back in.
Yeah, because even
go ahead.
Even if you take away the salary cap limitations of that, it's really hard to justify giving $1.5 million, $2 million, no matter what his offensive output, to a 40-year-old player. He was great this year. He was phenomenal this year. But Father Time is always undefeated. Just ask Kobe Bryant what Father Time did to him this year. Made him a shell of himself. You can't guarantee.
Well,
we saw with Bill Guerin, too. One year he's all right. He's doing a good job. And the next year, those legs just aren't there anymore, and it happened just like that. It's hard to justify giving $2 million to a guy when he might fall off a cliff, when there's somebody like Oscar Sundqvist or somebody just like that in the minors waiting to be brought up for $500,000, $450,000 instead of dropping $1.5 million, $2 million on a guy who might not have the goods.
And that's why these low-priced depth signings are so crucial. You know, you're not going to be able to replicate the Matt Collins signing again because, like you said, he'll be another year older. You know, it won't quite come out of nowhere, and he'll be more expensive for whoever signs him. So just being able to kind of get ahead of the curve, identify the guys who might have had a bad year, are doing all the little things right, chipping in where they need to be chipping in, is a big part of finding the next Matt Collins. Because if we get a guy in on that price tag, decent offensive numbers this time next year, I'm sure people are going to love him just the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel if we go far in the Cup playoffs, some of those guys do have a small market for him, and it's happened when remember the Lightning signed Gary Roberts for 2 years when he was 40. I mean, Gary Roberts is a specimen, and he's not to be put in any other bucket with anyone else, but there's always a market for that guy. It's not necessarily with the Penguins at all. I don't understand if they ship him out, then if he wants to go somewhere else and make more money, I mean, that's cool. It's not going to, you know, break any hearts. And I feel this is just a special season for him. He really fit well, and he might be one of those players that, you know, might retire after the season. And, you know, people that play in Pittsburgh usually stick around here. So it might be at that capacity.
Yeah, it's gotta be hard. Like, you're 40 years old. You've clearly proven you can still play at a high level, but how many chances do you have to walk off on top? Do you take one more payday? Do you take another $2 million to support your family? Or do you say, you know what, this is the right time to go? And really, that's only a choice an individual can make. Look how long it took Peyton Manning to decide, you know what, I was done, even though he could have gotten a contract somewhere else for $10 million a year. It would have been like L.A. or Houston or something, but he wasn't coming back to Denver. But he could have gotten another contract. Instead, he made the right to call to say, I'm done. It's got to be tough.
Yeah, I've never retired from anything, so I don't know.
I've also never made $700,000 a year, let alone with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, exactly. So there's
a little bit easier to walk away when you've already banked that much.
Yeah, when you're making $700,000 a year for 18 years, even though Cullen has made more than that, it's a lot easier to be able to retire, let alone say, all right, I'm going to retire. We might not know the joys of either of those in our lifetimes, you know? So it's a little different. But, yeah, to your point,
well,
I don't know.
At least know the joy of retirement. You know, if I manage to know the joy of making $700,000 a year, I mean, hey, that's just an added bonus.
That's golden, yeah. Yeah, you know, Paul makes that on a daily basis, so really, you know, what do I know? But
I do. Call me Money Bags.
That's right. Paul Money Bags Clemente.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, knowing that, I'm going to have to ask for a raise.
Yeah, I've been told I'm owed back pay for like 3 years of writing and this podcast. You know, just
yeah,
whenever you get the chance, 3%. Thanks, Money Bags. Yeah, yeah.
I give you guys 3% bump every year. Did you know? I think today is our 3-year anniversary.
It is. You're correct.
Really? Yeah.
You are absolutely correct.
We did zero things.
Much like we almost did today, we did zero things. No.
We did all the things.
We did all the things. No, yeah, hard to believe it's been 3 years dealing with you jerks. I don't know how I do it or why I do it. But
you might be the only OG left, Nick. Are you the only...
Man, that's a good question.
I fired everybody.
That's a good question. I mean, Ryan was fired 20 times before he actually left, so, you know.
It was tough getting rid of him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point, man. I might be, oh, wow. I'm old now. Let's move on before I feel even worse. Speaking of going the distance, how about Chris Letang? I don't think he ever stopped playing tonight. I don't think he ever once left the ice. According to the official stat sheet, Chris Letang saw 26 minutes and 32 seconds of game time. Just about half of the game Chris Letang played.
Well, I'm glad we were able to get a bit of a breather in this one with New York being bothered up. We didn't have to rely on him to play 30 minutes tonight. And the crazy thing is, I mean, looking back on the box score, they don't have him in front of me, but I'd say this is probably, if not his lowest of the series, the second most for sure.
Yeah, he's been just a workhorse, and it's, you know, obviously the voting's over. There's no chance of any kind of recount or whatever, but the way we saw him play down the stretch, playing these minutes consistently, and then doing this now in a bigger spotlight, it's amazing to me that he will not win the Norris, because he's not going to. They're going to give it to Drew Doughty or something, somebody who actually doesn't deserve it, because Doughty had his time, yeah, but it's faded. He's not the person he was. Same with Shea Weber, not the player he was. Carlson, he had a bunch of points. Awesome, excellent. Dick Tarnstrom once led the team in scoring. Granted, that was like 32 points, but as opposed to Carlson's point per game. But still, you know, Letang is just a better all-around player, but I also get the sexy pick of Carlson. But it is still puzzling to me that Letang may not win the Norris.
Well, let's throw this out here. Letang keeps playing he's playing at Penguins to make a deep playoff run. By the way, I did look it up. He played 32-52 in game two and 25-10 in game one. So this was the second most he's played in the three games, but almost 33 minutes in a game that ended in regulation. But let's say Chris Letang does go out. He has himself the same level of play, long playoff run. He's got to be positioned to be the front runner for the Norris going into next season, don't you think?
It drives me nuts where I try and think of these eloquent arguments and stats that people maybe aren't, you know, that they may be overlooking to make an argument for a player like Letang. And then the guys that vote for it, they go, okay, Norris, which one's that? Defenseman? And then they filter for points on NHL.com. Like, all right, cool, that's not bad. It seems like it happens every year. It's like you try your best, and I'd love to know, like, who – I know Duncan Keith won a few times and he hasn't been top in points, but that usually seems to be like, whoever's top in points, cool. This is our guy. You know, it's not points per game or anything else is considered. I think Letang's been just as good as anyone else I've ever seen on the ice, whether it be Doughty or Subban or Carlson or even guys, you know, like Murphy and dare I even say Coffey. He's been just as good and just as reliable.
And – I mean, he's been above a point per game for, I don't know the exact status, 40 or 50 or something. Mm-hmm. Games, it's just been such a high level, and it's amazing to think back. The start of the season with him paired with Ian Cole, just how awful those two looked under Mike Johnston on the ice together. I mean, to think that Johnston could have taken a player of this caliber and put him in a position to look just that bad, I think might be the most damning thing about his tenure here.
I always feel like with Mike Johnson, it's like we got out of a bad relationship. Like, everyone told you it was bad. You kept saying, nah, it's cool, we get along. And then once he's gone, you realize how terrible it actually was. I mean, I'm not a big, you know, fire to coach guy, and I always feel like it's a big yinzer-y thing to do, but you can't disagree with just how an amazing turnaround Sullivan's had with his team, but you just don't realize once you look back at the beginning, just the beginning of this season, how terrible they were. They were lethargic. They had no idea what they were doing. Everyone was tired. People getting hurt. It was just – and Johnson had no clue what was going on ever. I'm convinced he had no idea. He was frightened behind that bench, and just a 360. It's been incredible. There's no – I can't think of a better person for the job, maybe Babcock, if we would have, you know, hindsight that. But
I mean, I wouldn't change anything, just given the way things have turned out, just because I'm not sure if Babcock would really get them playing at the level that they're playing at right now. And, you know, we wouldn't have hired Sullivan as a head coach last year, so it's not Babcock if he decided to make the change. We wouldn't have him today. Who knows where he'd be. But, I mean, I think it's just amazing when you go and you look at him taking over for Johnston. Basically, when he took over the same team, never had to throw Sedari in there, which was a big boost for him. But he's essentially looking at the same roster. When Daly came over, he was not quite the level of Rob Scuderi bad, but he wasn't being viewed in a very good defensive light. And Johnston just said, our defensemen are terrible. We've got to pack everyone back in our zone and try not to let other teams outscore us. Mike Sullivan said, all right, defensemen are terrible. We've got to get down the ice and score some goals. And, I mean, you should obviously see which one has suited this team better.
Absolutely.
Mike Johnston seems like a fine gentleman. He seems like an intelligent man. And but Mike and I have talked about this. We talked about it with Jim Loke, Yinzer, that works at a Fox affiliate in D.C. Mike Sullivan seems like a nice man, a smart man, that was put in a position to fail. Because I think there's a reason why you saw Willie Desjardins and Carolina's head coach, whose name is right now
Bill
escaping
Peters.
Me. Thank you. Why you saw
yeah.
Bill Peters, yeah. Why you saw them turn down this job. It's because not only, as we were first reported, the Penguins are saddling them with an assistant coaching staff to where they couldn't really pick their own men, but did they really want their first NHL job to be one with expectations of Stanley Cup or bust, with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang and Marc-Andre Fleury as your guys? No, I think it makes a lot more sense for a first-time coach to learn with their team, which makes sense why Desjardins went to a growing team in Vancouver, how he's done, not so much. And it makes sense that Peters went to a young, growing team in Carolina, and he's done well. He's seeing that team go on the uptick. It really didn't make sense for them to pursue a first-time coach. And I think that in the end, they were just kind of looking for a fall guy. But the problem was it didn't seem like they had a step two or step three in their hands. It was like the underpants gnome. Step one, hire the young guy, hire the new guy. Step two, question mark. Step three, profit. They didn't know that fill in the blank, and Mike Sullivan really fell into their lap at the perfect time and was the perfect coach. But I just don't think that Johnston was ever in a position to succeed because he was in over his head from day one.
And, I mean, I think if you look back at that whole search, it was both the coaching search and the general manager search. It just seems it was a lot of knee-jerk reactionary responses. You know, I mean, David Morehouse pretty much said, all right, I've got my chance. I can just completely take over. You know, this last loss is the straw that's going to break the camel's back. And, you know, that we came down to Pierre McGuire or Jim Rutherford, and for coaching, we came down to having our coaches, you know, that we wanted to hire. And, you know, I think the rumor was that we were going to hire Peters, I believe it was, not Desjardins. And that one spoke when they hired Tocchet. I mean, it just pointed to a team that now, I mean, things are working out great. I think, you know, having Guerin and Botterill on the staff there, it certainly seems like they've been putting their mark all over this team. And, you know, it's worked out, but it just goes to show you just how little preparation or planning there was back then. And they got their third choice, or who knows what choice it was in Johnston, because I don't think anyone bought the, you know, we didn't consider him because we didn't think he was going to be available stick they threw out there. They didn't think that a junior coach was going to be, you know, wanting to listen to what was one of the more prestigious NHL jobs. It was just ridiculous. And, so they certainly had some good strokes of luck following that offseason.
Yeah, this story could have definitely had a lot more terrible ending. I mean, I don't want to look too far ahead from the Rangers series. I think that's a mistake, but, you know, there's no reason why it should have worked out the way it did. We're pretty lucky it did.
Speaking of looking too far ahead, is Washington going to have any players for the next round?
There's a small sinister part of me that that kind of is like, okay, cool, just beat the hell out of each other, you know, especially if the Flyers start losing their last game, you know what they're going to do. They're going to goon it up. And although I don't like wishing injury to a player, maybe they can skip, you know, a couple games, you know, heal some wounds and give us a little bit of a break.
And that's the thing. You're down 3-0 in the series. This is your postseason. This is your playoffs. Your Stanley Cup is going to be beating up the other team so badly that they can't win. It's kind of like what the Bengals are going for with the Steelers towards the end there. All right, you know what? We're not going to beat you because we're total idiots. Let's go ahead and take out Antonio Brown, and we'll hurt Ben Roethlisberger. You know, it's the same kind of thing that the Flyers are going to probably be looking at, and yeah, that's just because that's how they are. That's the kind of thing that they do. They don't go out with grace. They don't go out with pride. Their dignity and pride is beating up the other people and saying, yeah, well, you're bleeding and you're hurt now.
I wish
mean, the cognitive dissonance in that, final game, final two games, however long series goes on is going to be great. I mean, just imagine a little angel and devil on their shoulders. On the one hand, the Flyers, the fans, their organization, pretty much everyone in the city are going to love just crushing the Capitals blow after blow, even regardless of what's on the scoreboard. But there's not going to be that part of them that's like, well, they're going to face Pittsburgh next, most likely. Pittsburgh's in the pole position. And the more they beat up the Capitals, the more it helps the Penguins move on further. And, I think there's going to be a lot of uneasy feelings in Philadelphia as they start prepping for some tea times.
Yeah, and early news is that Braden Holtby had his little collision scare in practice, but he's fine, so he'll be good to go tomorrow night. And even if not, Philip Grubauer behind him, I saw him play in South Carolina here and play in Hershey. He's not bad. For going against the Flyers, he's fine. He'll win you a game. He'll win you a game four or a game five. It's if they get – if Holtby is for some reason out against a team like the Penguins that the Capitals have to worry.
Oh, that's right. Nuverse on the Flyers now, not the Capitals.
That's right, yeah. It's the truth.
Boy, don't you think he'd love trying to mount a rally for his new team against a team where it looked like at a point there, it looked like he was going to be the guy in Holtby's shoes, the goalie of the future. It just never materialized for him.
Yeah, and the Capitals, I don't know, man. Their pipeline is pretty solid with some good goaltending talent. I worked for a Capitals affiliate last year, and they had some solid goaltending. This year, the team is looking to be – I don't work for them anymore, but the team looks even better with even more goaltending talent in the pipelines. And for some reason, it's just something they can do. They're able to go ahead and bring in these really good goaltenders. I mean, you look at Holtby, you look at Neuwirth, you look at Varlamov. You look at the guys behind him, in like Grubauer, and I think it's Vitek Vinanen or something along those lines, and in the ECHL right now, that's got a big career ahead of them. I don't know how the Capitals keep doing it, but it's impressive that they keep doing it.
And hey, thank your lucky stars right now that Pittsburgh seems to be doing something similar. I mean, imagine years past, we get down to our second, let alone our third goalie. We're even Fleury in a couple of seasons there for a while. It was not going to be pretty in the playoffs, and that we can have Zatkoff come in. Be admittedly far from perfect. The team, struggle with playing in front of him. But as a third goaltender, be able to go 1-1. Matt Murray comes back as a backup, a guy who just played professionally for the first time last year. And just being able to do what he's been doing down the stretch. And, it gives you a lot of hope for the future. There's certainly a lot of optimism for the present that this team's going to be okay, even if Marc-Andre Fleury isn't able to come back for this series or into the next one. At what point does that start becoming more of an issue? They had him a week ago practicing and looking like he could be in position to play one of the early games. When do we start having to panic about what's going on with him?
The point that Matt Murray loses two games in a row. Until then, I'm not worried about it. Let him take the offseason to heal, if that's what it takes. Because, I mean, you guys know, I wrote the article. I think that in the next year or two, Fleury is gone. And I love Fleury. I've got a Fleury jersey. He's my guy. He was an 84 birth year like me. He was the first draft where I looked at a player and went, we're the same age. That could be me. So he's my guy. He was the first number one overall pick for the Penguins since Mario Lemieux. I love him. But Matt Murray is clearly the future at this point. Fleury's gone in a couple years. Why keep the guy that's making $4, $5, $6 million a year when you've got the guy right behind him making $900 million, that's a cap buster. $900,000 a year.
He can retire now.
He can definitely retire, yeah, after 1 year.
$900 million.
Yeah, but right now I'm not worried about Fleury until it's September and he's still not right. because Matt Murray has proven more than capable. Granted, it is a small sample size, but I feel more than comfortable going forward with Matt Murray, and there's not much of a drop-off behind him. There's not another pool. You know, it's I'm not concerned about Fleury.
Has Murray lost under Sullivan ever?
Murray? That's a good question.
He's
maybe
lost
was.
A couple games. You got to remember when he came up in December. That was under Mike Sullivan. I believe he went 2-2 then. I don't think
he lost
down the stretch though. He got a no decision against the Flyers. So, you know, he hasn't lost at the NHL level since December. Granted, we're talking NHL starts, whatever that number actually ends up coming out to. I mean, he's certainly someone who has a very bright future with the organization, and who knows? We could see their hand forced as early as this offseason. The NHL awards the team to Las Vegas, and they're able to get them in for the 2016-17 year, which I can't remember if the talk was next season or starting in 2017, but they're going to have to make some decisions in the expansion draft. And you have to protect it. But do you protect two goalies with Marc-Andre Fleury at where he is in his career? I mean, this has been an organization that's shown a lot of loyalty to their players, and that's probably a reason why so many of them stick around after they retire. But, you know, sooner or later, you've got to make a hard decision to just say, Fleury's playing great, but we need to move on to the next guy who's also playing great and is going to be much cheaper with the salary cap. I mean, it'll be interesting to see because I don't think we've really seen that decision yet with the Penguins. Certainly everyone that we've kind of cast aside so far has been more or less, just not the same player at their next stop in their career.
You look at guys like Ryan Whitney, who you thought was part of the core, but all right. Brooks Orpik had his time here. Those are like the two players of that grouping that came up that have gone their separate ways with the team. And each one, you know, Whitney, it was kind of a shock, but you had enough talent. Like, you had someone like Tang behind him, or you're like, okay. Orpik, everybody just kind of was like, all right, bye. We won't miss you because he had his time here. Thank you for your help, but we're gone. I think Fleury is the first one where it would be that separation of this is a business and this is a way to please people, that it might hurt people. But I just think it's inevitable.
13 years he's been with us. It's just that's a huge chunk of Penguins history. And he's been the man ever since. They put him up there, trialed by fire. I think he shared some games with, I think it was like, what, John Curry or someone strange? Like back in 03 or...
Yes,
he's
right.
Just been the man, and no one's challenged him. No one's been biting at his heels, and why not have someone like that? I can't see them letting Murray go for anything. The kid's incredible. I really can't. I can't see a situation where they go, okay, goodbye, Matt Murray.
No. This is somebody you lock up. There's no chance... Martin Brochu, Marc-Andre Fleury, Jean-Sébastien Aubin were the three goaltenders that year, by the way, in 2003. And Andy Chiodo.
Second guy?
I know, right? Martin Brochu, Brochu. He came in relief for like part of a game. He has a 0-0-0.
He actually dressed for the team? One of those guys you try to sneak in as a stat and see who catches you.
He has
I was paying attention. I know this guy does
something. His stat line is 0-0-0, but a 1.82 goals against average. So yeah, you know, he's got that going for
him. I'm sure. I mean, he must have dominated the next team he went to. I mean, that's a pretty elite number. So.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Yeah, there's you know, I could see Jari going. I can see any of these goalies in the pipeline going, but Matt Murray is the guy that they're going to hang on to. He is the next wave, the next era of Penguins hockey. You know, Crosby and Malkin have another 10 years in them, and Matt Murray is going to be the cornerstone, the backbone for a good part of that.
What if they win the Cup this year under Murray? I mean, it would just be – people will be like, all right, Fleury, you can go this summer. You know, the Yinzers are, they're pretty reactionary, and – they'd be totally fine. It would probably be the time to get rid of Fleury. Like, hey, man, we just won a cup, so.
Yeah, I think it would lessen that blow. I think that would be the perfect time to do it, unfortunately. For Fleury, but that'd be the perfect time because everyone can see, look, we've got his replacement. We just won a cup with him. It might be hard for a 21-year-old kid to have all that expectation suddenly put on his shoulders, but I think it would make it easier. And then you, of course, get the interest, oh, Fleury sucks. I can't win a cup with him. They won that one out of luck, and ever since then, he sucks. You know,
yeah.
You get those guys. But
I'm going to be the contrarian here. I mean, I think what you'll see happen is if they win the cup, that means that Fleury has been out, 2.5, 3 months with a concussion. I mean, it's certainly going to be a lingering issue into the off season. That's really going to make trading him difficult. I mean, unless you're looking to trade him because you really need the cap space to sign somebody, and I'm not sure there's really that many players available at this year's free agency pool. Not to mention, we're looking to fill more depth spots, I think. I mean, granted, if we could find that top two line winger, that top four defenseman, be a good addition to make. But trading him just for the sake of trading him at a point where his value is going to be compromised, I'm not sure if that's the way they would need to go in that scenario. But it's certainly going to provide food for thought going into the future. I mean, if I had to make a prediction, something with the expansion draft is going to end up causing Marc-Andre Fleury's time to come to a premature end. Hopefully with them trading Fleury away so they don't have to protect two goaltenders. But, if you protect Fleury and Murray, then who else are you going to leave open? There's some guys I don't think they're going to want to part with. So tough decisions are going to be made either way.
I don't think that's necessarily contrarian. I think that's smart. I think it was more what I was speaking about. And, yeah, I was alluding to trading him. But maybe just, the fan base getting over him a little bit better where the blow is a little bit softer.
No, I mean, things are obviously going to be much more difficult and painful because he's so well-liked. I mean, if you had to compare him to another Pittsburgh athlete, probably Heim Gord, right? This guy is always smiling, just went out there, played at a high level his whole career in Pittsburgh, and I mean, I'd say people loved him as much as they do Fleury.
Yeah.
So even at the end of, Heim Gord was certainly at the end of his career, but, that was tough for a lot of people. Fleury is still playing at a high level. I can only imagine that would be even harder.
And it's something similar to Troy Polamalu, too. I'm sure Troy could have taken a 2-3-year deal somewhere, rode out his career and still been an effective player. But instead, he chose to retire with one team. I'm pretty sure that when Fleury is traded, he's still going to have a couple, 3, 4, 5 peak years ahead of him. And he's not in a uniform. Yeah.
You cannot understand enough what Mike Bell has done with him, because Fleury, for a while there, just seemed to be the guy. Once he started getting his support to his 30s, it was just going to be, game over for him. And he started losing his athleticism. I mean, I'm not going to call him a technical goalie, but he's certainly getting that portion of the game down at a fairly quick rate. So you can see him being one of those guys who can kind of hang on into his late 30s because they are positioning themselves well. Boy, I never thought I would say that about Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah. Like you said, a few years ago, he was given up for dead. Everyone was writing him off. I always thought he was a top 10 goaltender, and everybody just looked at the playoff failures and understandably tainted him. But Bales has come in there and really just turned that around and made him a whole new person. It's especially in the playoffs. The nerves are no longer getting to him. He's in the past 2 years, two playoff series, last year and the year before against the Rangers, he was pretty much the only thing keeping those games competitive. They were overwhelmed otherwise, and it's amazing to watch that turn around. And as I said, the guy is my guy, so I am so happy to see it because, you have faith in that person the whole time, and it's nice to see it pay off.
Well, I have one final question before we wrap it up, actually. Maybe not final, it's not my show. But I have a question.
You're the host now. Okay, so you're telling us when to wrap it up. All right, okay, I see.
I have a question for both of you. It's a hot topic right now. Did Trevor Daley kiss Chris Letang after the game?
I didn't see it,
but knowing how
I'm sure there's some fan fiction being written
about
it. Yeah, I'm sure there's some fan fiction being written around it right now.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to start an account just with Daley goal celebration. We'll be one of the best accounts on the internet by far.
I think it's going to be the new Zapruder film. They're going to back into the layout.
I really think he might have.
I mean, that's sweet, you know. That's really cool. It's really nice of them. I hope that's the case. He deserves it. Chris deserves it and a lot more. Although I'm not going to be the one that gives him a lot more. He's got a wife. She can take care of that.
You liar.
You lie. All right. Well, we do have 4 minutes left in this show before it wraps up. So, guys, any thoughts heading into game four? Any last thoughts about this game before we wrap up? Game four is Thursday night for those keeping track at home.
Oh, Phil Kessel, man. I mean, I've got to mention that. I mean, you know, who would have known he'd be a playoff performer after not seeing them with Toronto? But that pass he made tonight on that Crosby goal, I just can't get over how incredible that was. Spotting him there through the crowd of people and just managing to get it right out of the table to stick. I mean, you know, people said for a while he was an underrated passer, but that's not a pass many people can make.
It's hard to argue with that, really. I just say, just keep doing what you're doing. Work hard. Those guys, I mean, they pretty flawless game one, except for that first goal, which I feel after watching it, Malcolm Blue's assignment, he was already looking up ice and then realized, oh, shit, I didn't have it. It is what it is. You're not going to shut out every team. But just have those, like, Sheary and Rust and Kunockel just generating those, just changing up the psyche of the Penguins and driving to the net and creating chances and just being absolutely fearless like everyone is in the early 20s. Just absolutely fearless, go to the net, create chances. And I don't think any of us see the Penguins not moving past this round, so I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, to your point about Phil Kessel, Brian, with the Bruins, he would show up. That one series with Toronto, he showed up, and every Olympics he's in, he shows up. When the time comes for this sort of thing, he finally gives all out. He can be frustrating in the regular season, not seeming to give his all full effort, and that's, you know, easily understandable that people get on him about it. But, man, it's hard-pressed to find a tournament-style schedule that Phil Kessel has been involved in where he hasn't just gone and given 100% as much as possible. And that's something that I always felt really comfortable in, especially as he was getting hot down the stretch when the Penguins were essentially in their playoffs. This is his season. This is Phil's season. It's not a coincidence. It's when it's grilling season, so the hot dogs are out. But it is Phil's season, and sure enough, he is shining, and I'm happy to see it.
Yeah,
you gotta love the guy.
Just to touch on what Paul said a little bit, too, I mean, when was the last time that we had this many young players in the lineup actually holding their own and able to contribute instead of just being buried? I mean, say what you want about Bowser not wanting to play young guys, but he didn't have any young guys worth putting in the lineup. It's funny, just after the whole Ray Sherrow can't draft narrative that we heard as he got out of town, that you know his parting gift would be overseeing a couple of drafts that are really helping us stock our bottom six right now.
Yeah, I was upset that you wrote that article, Brian, because I'd been thinking in my head, oh, this is what I want to write, because oh my God, this is Sherrow finally drafted forwards and they're starting to pay dividends. You beat me to that, and then the Kunockel article. We were both thinking the same thing about it. So yeah. I'm with you there. It's great to see that the young players are sticking up. They are starting to really work out. It's great to see they're finally contributing, and it's not a coincidence that it's the same time as the Penguins and their minor resurgence. I don't think there's any coincidence there.
And they've gotten stronger with every week too. I mean, when they first came up, you weren't really expecting much out of them because they were overmatched with the speed of the game, I think. But they got settled in, and especially that one stretch where half the lineup was out and it was an all AHL bottom six. They just they just kept growing and growing. And the guys that got them really deserve those extensions. And you see guys like Connor Sheary and Oscar Sundquist definitely have futures on this team in some capacity, for sure.
Yeah, what, their first 2 weeks, week or so, they only had like one goal and maybe like 3 points combined amongst the whole group. And now they're regularly leading the charge and contributing shorthanded and even chance, even strength. And it's impressive to watch them grow in such a short time. It really gives you hope for not only this season and the off season or the playoffs, as we've talked about, feeling a renewed sense of hope, but going forward too. As you said, these guys earned those extensions and they got them. And it's exciting. We're going to see this kind of thing from them for years to come. I think that's a good point to end the show tonight because, man, it's a 10:45. We're all adults. We all have jobs tomorrow. And we're all coming down off the high of a playoff postseason victory win. And Paul Clemente, Brian Keenan, thank you guys for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, all right. Thank you. You're the best.
Hey, happy anniversary to you guys at Penn's Initiative. It's been a pleasure. Whether you were here from the start like Paul or caught on later like you, Brian, it's been a pleasure to be a part of it, and I'm honored still to be here.
I wasn't much later. I mean, Chad was still there.
No.
Maybe the best thing or the only good thing that Chad has done for us.
We will not speak ill of the dead.
Well,
gentlemen, thank you. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Pat myself back on the back again.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, and we will do this again soon. Until then, until next time, I am Nick Case. We will see you Thursday night, Penguins postgame, regular season, postseason postgame. You know what I'm saying. Penguins Rangers, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. We will be here online on the airwaves right after. Mike Oski will likely be back. I will likely be here.
You will have Brian. Maybe we'll have Paul. Who knows?
Either way, we'll be here. Thanks for listening to Radio PI postgame here on the Radio PI. Podcast Network.